Yes, the title of tonight's lecture is The Rise of Internationalism. And we can see that the world is getting more international. I think especially the internet makes the world more international. And all the satellites with all the international television programs and all the business world and actually also all the refugees and all the immigrants and all the business world, and you can see the world is getting more and more international. And I guess in all countries there are individuals who are against this internationalism. They would prefer to be more national. And I guess in most countries there are also political parties who want more nationalism and less internationalism. So the question is if you can fight against the internationalism. Martinez claims that the evolution takes place by certain natural laws, and that he was able to experience these laws. And when you know the laws of evolution, you can also predict the direction of the evolution, and you can predict the result of the evolution. And from that standpoint, Martinus guarantees it is impossible to stop the international evolution. People can be against and then can fight it all they want, but it is impossible to stop this international movement. It's also interesting to see in some Muslim countries, maybe in China or North Korea, they try to stop international television. The citizens are not allowed to see international TV chains. They try to stop the individuals to have access to the internet. So they are sort of trying to stop this international. In Denmark, there is also a political party, Dansk Folkeparti, Danish party. And they have, for them, it's a very big program that they want more nationalism in Denmark. And of course, there are a lot who want that. And people are allowed to think what they are doing and fight for what they want. But it is impossible to stop this evolution. Martinus also talks about that the planet Earth is a living being. So we single individuals have only a little influence on the evolution of planet Earth. But he also speaks about the solar system is a living being, that the Milky Way, our galaxy, is a living being. He's talking about there are macrocosmic forces that are working with our planet Earth. There is a macrocosmic willpower behind the evolution here on planet Earth. So, I mean, a little mosquito cannot stop a hurricane. So in the same way, single individuals or single political parties, they cannot stop this evolution towards internationalism. We are in a very interesting place in the evolution. And Martinus talks about a spiral cycle with six different planes of existence, six kingdoms. But here in the animal kingdom is the biggest change in all six kingdoms during the evolution. In the animal kingdom, we start out as 100% selfish or egoistic living beings. And at the end of the animal kingdom, we have become real human beings who can practice neighborly love or brotherly love or unconditional love. So it's really a fantastic change. And there are laws for this change. And after World War II, there appeared a book with the title The Anatomy of Peace. The Anatomy of Peace. I've not read the book, but I think it's a good title. And for that reason, I've stolen this expression and would like to talk about the anatomy of war and the anatomy of peace. Because Martinus speaks about living beings in the animal kingdom as single-poled living beings. There are male beings dominated by the masculine pole and female beings dominated by the female pole. So they are purely single-poled living beings. And this single-poledness is the anatomy of war. Because there is a lot of fighting and war in the animal kingdom. And how can you stand it? Why don't the animals give up? Why don't human beings give up? Why shall you have all this fighting and concurrence and competition and wars and so on? Couldn't we avoid that? Well, how can we take it? And then Martinus explains that the biggest light in the animal kingdom, that is to melt together with an individual of the opposite sex, because then you will become a complete being. And in the copulation or in the sexual act, male and female sort of melt together. Even in the Bible, they talk about man and woman becoming one flesh. And there you can experience the Spirit of God or the Holy Spirit. And this light is so strong, it is the highest inspiration in the animal kingdom. It's so wonderful to fall in love and meet a partner of the opposite sex, because then you melt together and can experience the light and become a perfect human being. That means that you are not sovereign. You are dependent on the opposite sex. That means that you should have access to the most beautiful individuals of the opposite sex in order to experience the light or in order to become happy. For that reason, there is a big competition. There is a big fighting. So this single-poledness is the root to all wars. And in the animal kingdom, if the males are fighting against each other, it is the strongest that win, and they can take as many females as they want. But we are not animals anymore, or partly, we are partly animals and partly human beings. But now we are not fighting with physical force, now we are fighting with economical force. If you have got a lot of money, if you are very famous, then it's easier to get access to the beautiful individuals of the opposite sex. So then there is a fight about becoming it's a little bee or a fly that is disturbing me a little bit. What do we want to say, my dear little friend? Okay, sorry. I was a little bit distracted by this, or maybe it's even biting a little bit. We're fighting about the money and position and honor. So for that reason, this single pole state is the anatomy of war. And Martinus has a beautiful definition about nationalism and internationalism, because we are human beings and we can be selfish and egoistic, and we can also be altruistic. And in the same way, you could regard the different countries on planet Earth as individuals. And then there are some countries, they are very much into their nationalistic business. They want to be isolated. They want to keep their nationalism. There can be other countries, they are more into international communication, international cooperation. And then Martinus says that nationalism is the selfishness of the nations. If there are countries that are very nationalistic, they are sort of very selfish or very egoistic. But if there are countries that are unselfish, altruistic, they are very international. So internationalism is the altruism of the nations, and nationalism is the selfishness of the different nations. And the problem is that there is a partial love. You have favorites. And of course, with this single-poledness, your partner, then your partner is your favorite. You are partial. You prefer one for another person. And that is also the anatomy of war. But the anatomy of peace, that is the double-poledness. And the double-poled living being is totally sovereign because it's not dependent of another person in order to become happy. Because it's a complete living being, it has both poles in itself. And for that reason, a double-poled living being is not dependent on possessing or to monopolize another living being. And a double-poled living being is totally impartial. There is no favorites. If, for example, there is a couple, they have got four children, maybe the parents love the three of the kids, but the fourth kid is a little gangster, so they don't like him. It's, of course, very nice for the first three to be loved, but it's terrible for the fourth one to feel, my parents don't love me. And we know today that's so destructive. So it's good to be preferred and experience love, but there is a backside of the medal. So it's always leading to something bad if you have favorites. You can only solve the problems if you are total impartial. And gradually, now we are one and a half poled. And in the same way, it is with the countries. Are you only interested in things that are good for your own country, or are you also interested in cooperation for the benefit of other countries? Will you always be stay partial and love your own country, or will you also start to be interested to help the other countries? And personally, I must admit, I'm very interested in sport. I make a joke and say I only have two interests, that's cosmology and sport. Or put in other words, I'm only interested in peace and war. And now I guess in 10 days or something like that, the Olympic Games in Beijing in China will start. And I guess there's a lot of people who will watch television. And normally, you have a favorite. You want some person to win, some team to win. I mean, sport is totally uninteresting if you don't have favorites. If you love all people the same, you're not interested. It doesn't matter. Who cares who wins? But if you prefer your own country for other countries, if you prefer certain persons for other, then it's very interesting with sports. So for that reason, you are, in a way, very nationalistic when you are practicing this kind of partial love. But the question is, how much can you do? Can you go out in the world and work for peace in the world? Can you work for internationalism? Can you go out and make a difference? Can you go out and change the world? And many people are getting a little bit disappointed when they hear Martinus' answer. To put it very shortly, Martinus says, you can't change the world. You can only change yourself. And I know there are people who, they love to go in demonstrations for peace, and they are peace workers and stop using atom bombs, and they're doing a lot outside there, but it's impossible to change the others. There is also a person who has called Martinus' cosmology for the most inconvenient theory in the world. And I guess for two reasons. And one reason is, due to the karma law, you are yourself the cause of all your problems. You cannot blame the others. You are always the cause yourself. And if you want to get on in evolution, you have to make a lot of experiences. And when you experience pain, sufferings, problems, then you develop your compassion. After that, you can feel with others, and then you become more humane. So the road towards perfection is experience of sufferings. And that is a very inconvenient theory. I think it was much more convenient if you could sit down and meditate and get your cosmic consciousness in this incarnation. I mean, if it was such a theory, I'm sure there would be many more attending Martinus' cosmology lectures. There are so few who are coming, and I guess it's for that reason. And so if you wanted to contribute to internationalism or peace in the world, you should not care about the others. You should really work with yourself and try to work with yourself. And you could do it in that way. You could try to avoid to have to have so many favorites and to be more all-loving. In a way, you could say that internationalism is also democracy. If you could get some kind of world democracy, you would get a pure internationalism. But also, if you could get a world communism, and I would even also say a world Christianity. Martinus, in the fourth volume of Livets Bog, describes Jesus as the first and the best communist on planet Earth. And the New Testament is the gospel of the communism. Because if you have the same attitude as Jesus had, you have really an international attitude. Because if you have some national tendencies, you have some selfish or some egoistic tendencies. And as long as you have egoistic tendencies and selfish tendencies, you are not a real international human being. But you could say Christ, who was totally double-poled, who had this unconditional love, he was really, he had a 100% international attitude. And Jesus, he also spoke that nobody has a bigger love or a higher love than the person who is willing to give his life for others. That means, you can take it literally, he gave his life for others to show the way how a perfect human being is behaving. But at a smaller scale, it could also just mean that you could sacrifice something of your own convenience. That means you are willing to give up some privileges, you are willing to work, you are willing to do something for others in order to help them. So in a way, you're also sacrificing a part of your life to help others. Maybe there is a couple and they don't have so much money and one would like an education, there's not money enough for it. Maybe one of the two in the couple say, okay, I can take extra work and then we'll get money for your education. In a way, the time with extra work is also a way of giving one's life for the other. And of course, this is the attitude we shall reach at an international scale, that we should be interested in helping the other countries. I've very often been asked, what does Martinus say about the European Union? Because in a way you could say, oh, that's really international cooperation. And a lot of others say, no, that's pure nationalism, because the different nations will only enter the European Union if they have personal advantages from it. So it's sort of a club for rich countries. So there are some rich countries, they will enter the European Union in order to get even richer. Or when there is these elections, they vote, shall our country be member or not? The individuals are thinking about, is that an advantage for our country? And if it is an advantage, they will enter the European Union. So of course, there are selfish and egoistic motives in this international collaboration. There are also multinational companies like Coca-Cola and Microsoft or whatever. And there are many people who are angry with these multinational companies because they are doing this in order to earn even more money. But Martinus could also see some positive aspect of this because he said it gives a training in international cooperation. It's difficult to cooperate across the borders. There are different countries and different nationalities. It takes some practice in order to learn to cooperate. For that reason, it's good to get a training in international cooperation. And I guess there's a lot of problems in the European Union to harmonize the legislation in 25 different countries and all the problem with the languages. But it's a perfect training because according to the cosmic analysis, the result of the evolution here on the planet Earth will be an international world state where all people will live in peace and harmony with each other. And for that reason, we have to create an international world state. And then we need some training. So even if you could say it's bad with international companies or European Unions. It is an advantage also on the other side, because you learn to cooperate over the borders. Next Saturday we shall have an Esperanto week here in Clint, and so I would also like to talk a little bit about Esperanto, because Martinus also predicts that all people on planet Earth will eventually speak the same language. Is there any advantage with translations? It's a big work to translate books, and normally the quality is bad, or the book doesn't get better being translated. So translation is no advantage. It was much easier if all people could understand the same language. And Martinus thinks that no national language will become the international language of the world state for two reasons. It is about just. We shall have a just solution. And it is unjust to choose a national language and make it the international language. That's unjust. If it was English, for example, then it would be an advantage for the English-speaking world, and you would have to accept almost all the culture from the English-speaking world, and that would sort of maybe destroy the culture from many other countries. It is an unjust solution. And Martinus says, at the end, we have an international world state, and at the end, after 3,000 years, most people on planet Earth will have cosmic consciousness. So he says, perfect human beings also want a perfect language. Why should perfect people have an imperfect language? The Romans, they had these numbers. You know these from the Roman number system. This is 6 and this is 4 and 2. They did not have any zero. So I don't really know how you make multiplications and divisions in with these Roman numbers. But I would say, even if the whole world today was using the Roman number system, it would be an advantage for the coming people here on planet Earth if we changed to our present number system with a zero. It's so much better than the old system. So in a way, it's not an argument that even if all used it, we should go on using it, because why should we use a system that is so illogical or so hard to work with? Then it would be much better to have a perfect system. And all generations after would have our marvelous number system. Martinus talks about evolution in different areas, and the number system has had its evolution. And now Martinus thinks the number system is perfect. It has reached its culmination. You cannot improve the number system. Maybe you would propose we need an extra number between 14 and 15, or some would like to remove a number, but the number system would not be better. It is impossible to improve the number system. It is as perfect as it can be. But the language is not perfect yet. It can still be improved. Martinus also talked about classical music, classical painting. And there have been so many big geniuses. And now Martinus thinks these arts has reached its culmination. You can sort of not improve classical music or improve this classical painting. It has reached its culmination. The number system has reached its culmination, but the language has still not reached its culmination. And Martinus writes in the end of third volume of Livets Bog, that the language will become just as perfect as the number system. And maybe I should not go into too many details, but according to my own opinion, Esperanto is a perfect language. It is just as perfect as the number system. From education, I am a chemist, and it is very complicated to talk chemistry with foreigners, because In Danish, we say eddikesyre, and in German, they say essigsäure, and maybe in English, they say acetic acid. There are many different names for the different compounds, so it's very complicated. How shall chemists worldwide cooperate? But now they have agreed on a complete, logical, perfect system that are accepted by all people over the world, and that is they have made a logical system giving these compounds names, and that can be accepted by all. So in the same way, you can also make such a perfect system with the language. I don't remember the names. Maybe it was Kant or Descartes, or I don't know. But there have been some of the old big philosophers. They have been thinking of, wouldn't it be possible to create the perfect language? Isn't that an interesting idea? If you had the chance to start from the bottom, shouldn't it be possible to create a perfect language? And as far as I can see, Ludwig Lazaro Zamenhof, a Polish man who was born into a Russian family, he created this language, Esperanto, the international language. And he constructed it from the bottom as a completely logical and a completely perfect language. And for that reason, Esperanto will become the world language. And Martinus was often asked if Esperanto would be the world language or the language of the world state. And you cannot see it on print in Leavitt's book or the symbol books, but there are recordings of question periods where he was asked directly. And then he said, yes, it will be Esperanto because it is so fully developed and it has come so far. And he could also see that this man, Zamenhof, he was elected by Providence to do this special task. I guess through history there have been 1,000 planned languages, and a lot of them have also died again. There have been many attempts to make such an international language. But this man, he was a very humane man. And the reason why he created it was when he was 5 years old and he went to the marketplace with his father, he saw that people were very often fighting. They lived in a Polish town called Bialystok, and there were people talking Russian, Polish, German, and the Yiddish, the Jewish language, and maybe some Lithuanian. And then they had to make business, and they didn't understand each other's language. So they were fighting very, very often. But his father, Zamenhof's father, he was language teacher. And when he came, he could always solve the problems. And that was interesting to the little boy to see you can solve the problems when you can communicate, when you understand each other, you can solve the problems. So already when he was 5 years old, he had this idea of creating a language that everybody could understand. And already as a little boy in school, together with his friends, he made a secret language and he developed it more and more. And he also loved the Latin language very much, and he would also like to modernize Latin. 500 years ago, Latin was actually an international language in Europe. Before the Reformation, Danish priests, they could study theology in Prague or Rome because they could just study it in Latin. But the Latin language is very complicated. And I guess for that reason, it has gone a little bit back. But Esperanto, in fact, is a modernized Latin. Most of the words are word stems, are roots from the Latin language. And he improved and improved this language. And there is also an internal idea in Esperanto. And that is also international brotherhood and tolerance. And he made Esperanto in order to avoid war and misunderstandings. And he made it so that all people could meet each other on the same basis. Not that one should speak his native language and another one should learn another language. In the French Revolution, they spoke about liberty, equality, et fraternity. And I think that's sort of a freedom and brotherhood, and we should all be equal. And in a way, it's also the same idea in Esperanto. And even Martinus even once said that people who learn Esperanto, Esperantists, they are born idealists. From sort of the beginning, they have this international attitude. They want international understanding. They want international tolerance. And at a board meeting, I guess it was about 1960 or 1965, the board of the Martinus Institute decided that Esperanto should become the official international language of the Martinus Institute. Maybe Esperanto will not become the world language, but if Esperanto will not become the world language, it would be a language that is even better. But Esperanto is built by principles that you sort of cannot improve. For example, a noun has the ending O, and if a word is ending on O, it's a noun. So, I mean, can you improve that idea? Yeah, you could take A or E instead of, but I mean, in principle, it wouldn't be any better. So it is built up just almost like a kind of a computer language, because you can see all the grammar from the words. But then you would say you cannot express all feelings and so on when it's a sort of mathematical build-up. But I mean, if you take this piano, these frequencies on the strings are also mathematically accorded to each other. But you can express the most beautiful feelings, even though there are this math in the vibrations of the strings. And he has only taken natural words, and also judged from linguists, Esperanto is a natural language. There is first, second, third person. It's present and past and future. And all these things that you find in national languages are also present in Esperanto. But most people, they are so nationalistic, so they will not give up their own national language. There was once a Danish politician, Lone Dybkjær, who said that she thought the Danes should give up speaking Danish and start to speak English. And they were shouted at her. They got so angry with her. But in a way, I think that's neighborly love. That's also like Jesus. Then you can give your life for others. I mean, that's a real international attitude. If that can help, we are willing to give up our national language and strive and work in order to learn another language. That's what leads towards internationalism, if you are willing to do a work in order to create an international world. But you could, as I said, you could also ask, what can I do in order to contribute to world peace? And then Martinus always argued that when we have a world consisting of peace cells, the biggest contribution you could give, that is to turn yourself into a peace cell. And how should I turn myself into a peace cell? I can work with forgiveness. I can start and study the cosmic analysis and start to learn the laws of life. And then I could, somebody is doing something evil to me, normally you get angry with him and will get angry with him and will take revenge and so on. But according to the cosmic analysis, you can understand he helps me in my evolution. Normally you think that your enemies are against you, but according to the cosmology, your enemy is a mirror image of yourself. He is just telling what you did wrong. There's also, if you get a letter from the postman, Normally, you don't get angry with a postman if it's an unpleasant letter. Maybe he tells you you shall pay some money. You don't get angry with him because you know the postman, he's just a messenger. He's just giving me a message. But we should also learn to look upon all other people as messengers. They are just giving me a message about how I was in the past. And that gives me the opportunity or possibility to improve myself. So my so-called enemies are helping me in my evolution. So I should be very grateful to all the people who are very nasty to me. There are much meditation and yoga and training. And Martinus was often asked if he had some system so you could train and get to perfection somewhat faster. And he was asked so often, so at the end, he had a standard answer. And he said, yes, I have a system. If you really want to reach cosmic consciousness, you should work with yourself. And the most important field to work with yourself, that is to forgive your enemies. But I mean, that's a boring occupation, isn't it? It's much more fun to criticize your enemies and tell your friends, now listen, he's so stupid, and listen, he did such an idiotic thing. And but in a way, you are taking a sign and telling, now listen to me. Here you can hear what I have done in my past. Also, according to the cosmic laws, you can say, if you are angry with your enemy, if you are beating your enemy, actually you are beating yourself. And from one point of view, there is only two living beings in the universe. That's yourself and the living universe. And the whole living universe is a single living being that is communicating with you. That's so important in cosmology to understand. Life speaks to you. And everything that you are doing to others, you are doing towards the universe. You are doing that toward God. So in a way, the most stupid thing you can do, that is to beat your enemy. Because you are beating yourself and you are beating God. It's so stupid. It's the most idiotic thing you can do. And there is something you can influence with your willpower. There are things you can influence with your mentality and your training. And there are things that you can't influence. But Martinus says, you have an area where you have a big influence. And that is where you can, in your thoughts, be grateful to your enemies. You can pray for them. You can want that they feel joy for life, that they are happy, that they might have a good fate. And you can also be grateful to God. Thank you because you sent me these lessons. Thank you for giving me these possibilities to develop myself. So you can, in a way, learn to have a positive attitude towards the worst possible experiences in life. That really leads to a mental sovereignty. Jesus on the cross was tortured to death through 9 hours in the most cruel way. But he felt pity for those because he knew they're crucifying themselves. They're beating themselves, these poor people. They don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them because they do not know what they're doing. And Martinus says it was just not something that they said. Jesus really felt it deep from his heart, these poor people. They don't know. He really prayed for them. So that's really perfection. And that was also the central, the most important thing in the mission of Jesus Christ. That was to show the conduct or the behavior of the perfect human being. So we could have this example. And after the crucifixion, Martinus said that from that point, it was no longer logical to take revenge. And I mean, if people started to live along these ideals, then you could really change the world. Then you could create an international world. And Martinus has once pointed out three factors that are very important in evolution. And I guess they are also very important in the evolution of internationalism. And it is not Martinus' numbers, but I would say 90% of the evolution takes place by your own experiences. All evolution goes continuously. Each time when you have made an experience, you have developed yourself. You have, and when you have trained and practiced, you are developing. So that is the most important thing, that is to do your own experiences. Could you develop your feelings through studies at university? No, you can't. You can develop your intelligence through studies at university, but your feelings can only be developed through feeling. You must feel it. You must experience yourself. So 90% is your personal experience. But another very important factor, and I would give it 9%, and that is the spiritual science. Martino thinks it is very important for mankind today to get a scientific guidance in human behavior. It should be shown in a logical and a scientific way what is the right way to behave. And it has been shown in Christianity, in humane religions, but that was based on blind belief. And you believe blindly in authorities. Now people have become very rational. You shall show it scientifically that it pays to be good. And Martinus actually said, my mission is to show that it pays to be good. You profit from being good. The only logical thing, the only scientific thing is to serve your fellow beings. The only logical behavior is to practice neighborly love. So it's really important to show it pays to be good. And that can be done through the spiritual science. And for that reason, Martinus also called his work intellectualized Christianity. He said in the beginning, of course, Christianity was a world religion. But when eternity enters in Christianity, it becomes a science. And I had a lecture here on Monday where I talked a lot about eternity. The lecture's title was Understanding Eternity. And that is when you understand that life is eternal, the universe is eternal, and you understand the principle of contrast, you understand the karma principle, you see everything, then the Christianity becomes totally logical. But you cannot make a logical system with a one-life theory in Christianity. Then it's blind belief. But you can prove the results of Christianity as natural laws. In a way, I think it's also very, very simple in a way to explain. If you see, say, there are two living beings. It is me and the rest of the universe. If I do something that hurts the universe, that is a disadvantage for the universe, would the universe accept that? Or would that be logical to damage your surroundings? We see also with the pollution. Is it logical to pollute your own surroundings? Then you will have to live yourself in polluted surroundings. But if I am an advantage for the wholeness, for the whole universe, it's also an advantage for me. It cannot be logical to be a disadvantage for others. Martinus has also once explained that love is the same as to give freedom. But today, the superpowers, they have so much money and they've taken so much of the resources of planet Earth that they've got the power and they can exploit the poor countries. They can suppress the poor countries. But you cannot make a true internationalism through suppressing other countries, through abusing other countries. You can only make a pure internationalism with the Christian ideals. And if you really want a just solution, you would not be interested in taking more. You would be more interested in serving. I was mentioning the Olympic Games, and Martinus says in the future, people are not interested in winning. If they have a race and they come to the goal, then the first one, he stops and say, I don't want to win. I would prefer that the others would win. And then the next man is coming. Oh, please, please pass the goal first. No. And then the next one, and they have a long discussion. No, I want you to win. And that's the death of all sport. And that is because you've got another attitude. And what is the big problem of today of nationalism? That is, I want personal advantages, our country want personal advantages, and when all want advantages, there's this fight and this war. The opposite situation, we want to help you. We want to help you. So that is a sort of a kind of competition, who can help who. And I mean, that cannot lead to any war. So you really have to change this attitude. So I would say that pure Christianism is also leading to true internationalism. But there is also the last very important factor in the evolution, and that is the good example. It also plays a role how you behave. For example, if there is a family and then one of the children starts to smoke, then the parent says, you must not smoke, you're not allowed to smoke, we won't have this smoking. But I mean, if the parents are smoking themselves, it could look as if the children had learned it from the parents. But maybe the parents are not smoking and they're trying to stop the child to smoke. But anyway, if the child goes on smoking, at least the parent can say, the child did not learn it from us. But I've also experienced here in Martinez Center Clint in study groups, when during the presentation, sometimes people are telling why they are coming to Clint, or they ask, why did you come to Clint? And I've heard the same story from different persons. They say, on my job, there was a colleague, it was a woman. She was so kind and mild and sympathetic and lovable, and she was vegetarian and so on. And someday I couldn't help ask her, why are you like this? And they ask and ask. And then at the end she said, well, I'm studying Martinus cosmology and so on and so. And for that reason she came here. I'm trying to convince people about Martinus cosmology, discussing and arguing. I even get angry when they cannot say I'm right. That's not the right way to propagate the cosmology. It's more the other way when you can practice it. And Martinus also says that his cosmology, it has a minor importance if you only is a theoretical understanding. It has its big understanding when you start to practice in everyday life. That's the importance. And there was a woman, he was very afraid of losing the interest for Martinus cosmology. And she asked him, is there a risk that I can lose my interest for the cosmology? And then Martinus guaranteed, as long as you are interested in practicing these ideas in everyday life, you cannot lose the interest for these analyses. In his lectures, Martinus very often said, you are the new world culture. And sometimes it can be, you are pioneers for the new world culture. And I'm not Martinus, but I also want to say, you are the new world culture. You are the pioneers for the new world culture. It can be a little bit difficult to explain what is Martinus cosmology about. What are we working with here in Clint? What are we doing? What is the purpose? And once Martinus asked himself very short and very clear, we are working with a new world moral. We are working with a new world moral or a new world culture. That is actually the purpose of Martinus cosmology. So I mean, this spiritual science also plays a big role in creating this internationalism, because I would say pure internationalism, that is also pure Christianity, it's also pure democracy, it also pure communism. So through the studies of the spiritual science, and through the fact that you are practicing them and becoming a good example, you can actually also yourself contribute to the creation of an international world. Thank you for the interest.